Hey folks, I hope you're having a fantastic day today. Anyhow, what are you eating? I hope it's not junk food, because today's guest is Randy Rolf, and she is the author of The Single Ingredient Diet. No, it's not just one ingredient. You're going to find out later what it's all about, what we're talking about. Anyhow, you know what? If you're anything like me, we all mean our best to eat right, right? And that's the hardest thing for me to do. I'm always either reaching for some kind of junk, crap food, or something that tastes good, which is junk or crap food. So what do we do about this? Let's find out from Randy Rolf.
First of all, dietitians are not, I am a nutritionist. So dietitians are more trained in a medical paradigm for hospital diets and healing from different chronic diseases. And I'm trained as a nutritionist from the prevention part of it, from physiology, how to keep the body healthy. Mm-hmm. So there's a little different emphasis between them, and it's a different term. I started out as an attorney. I had traveled all over the world with my parents. They loved traveling in the summer, and I wanted to make the world more peaceful, and I thought becoming a diplomat would be the thing. And then so I studied international relations in college, and but then I met my husband, and I thought, well, if I'm jet setting around the world, I won't have much of a family life. So I studied law because I thought that would be a good beginning for diplomacy and also give me an idea of how the society is structured. And when I had my own family, I was like, well, wait a minute, I want to take care of my family. So I just started studying nutrition on my own because I'd never learned to cook. I was such an academic, and my parents did all the cooking. So I decided to take a course, and it totally opened my eyes. Actually, I was talking with a scientist at a conference when I was working for a TV station before I went to law school, and he said that Hungarians did not get as much cancer because of the pepper they put in all the red pepper they put in all their traditional diets. And I thought, that's how you should eat. You should eat how healthy people eat around the world. And I've been to many of the countries. And so then I studied nutrition. And then when I was practicing law, my legal colleagues kept asking me about nutrition, because I'd say, well, you shouldn't eat that, you know, that's not going to help you, your brain stay clear for your next legal challenge. And so then I realized I had a really good skill in explaining nutrition so that it made sense even to lawyers. So so then when I had my own kids, other parents started asking me why it was going so well. And they said, you should write a book. So my first book was about you can postpone anything but love. And I thought, well, you can postpone your career to be with your kids, because love, you can't postpone it. You know, you can't say, oh, my three-year-old, I don't have any time for my three-year-old. I'll love him when he's six. You know, can't do it. So that's been my motto all through life. You can postpone anything but love. And it works in everything, not just parenting. You need to love your own body. You need to feed your own body today, not in 10 years when you have time. So it's all about taking care of yourself and your family. And then it balloons for your community and your world. So I also have a saying that healthy people make a healthy planet. And happy people, you're more likely to be happy if you're healthy. So it all works together in my view. And I actually earned a master's in theology in the 90s just to have that other aspect of how do we talk about the spirit as well as the body and the mind. So I try to be a Renaissance person, have wow. all the disciplines working together for teaching people how to be happy.
Well, like I said, you are more than, and I'm glad you corrected me and let us know the difference really between dietitian and a nutritionist. So thank you on that. But yes, you are more than just that, because like you said, you've been all around the world. Theology, you've worked on that. Bettering oneself, improving and helping the body. And, you know, the one thing I want to say about that is, like I said, about postponing. And I think a lot of people find a reason or two to postpone that health. We always, New Year comes around, I'm going to make that resolution, I'm going to get healthier, or any time of the year we say that. But then we say, one, it's too expensive, I can't afford it. That's, I think, a huge one, which I think is kind of true, though. It is expensive, but
at first,
your body is far more expensive if you go unhealthy, and like we're saying, the chronic diseases.
Exactly.
So it is very important. And number two is we're in that immediate society now, and we just want to grab something and eat it really quick. So, and I think that's done some harm to our bodies too, right?
Yes. Yes. And it's interesting in economics that as consumers, we're trained to compare one thing with another. And you say, okay, this commercial carrot is such and such price, and the organic carrot is more. But if you're eating organic and preventing chronic disease, you're avoiding missed work, pain, maybe surgery, maybe chronic disease in your 60s. You get more colds, so you're buying junk at the drugstore. You're saving so much money maintaining your health. It's not even funny.
Yeah, and it's not just about maintaining that health. And you kind of alluded to the fact about being happy, feeling better. If you're healthy, you feel better, you're happier, you get more things done. And in turn, I think you also attract those that are like you around you, and you have this happy world.
Exactly, exactly. One of my personal goals is to play with happy people. So my work is to make more people happy, show them how to be happy, not just get them to smile, but to show them how to have a happy life. And when you have good nutrition too, your relationships are better, because if you are happy and you feel good about yourself and your health, your marriage works better, the kids have a better example, and you're not irritable, they're not irritable. It affects everything, and on the job as well. You can stay more calm when the people around you are starting to get crazy.
Yes, yes. And we hear about it often with younger kids or children, you know, going to school. They talk about the lack of healthy nutrition and that breakfast or whatever it might be, lunch, and it's more difficult for them to concentrate and to learn. So if you have that healthy diet, good nutrition, it's good for the brain, good for the soul, all of that.
Yeah, exactly, Chuck. I've written a number of parenting books, and when I was doing a lot of parenting counseling and courses, it made a huge difference just changing the diet. So that was another thing where I just said, I'm going to focus my next book on nutrition, because it affects how parents interact with their children and how the children perform in school, like you're saying. If they're eating a bowl of cereal that's half sugar, they're going to lose their concentration. They're going to want a snack before lunchtime. And then the government lunches that are available are deeply influenced by the fast food production industry, which gives them the cheapest food possible. And they say, well, they only like pizza and macaroni, so that's what we'll give them. Well, you know, if you have control of people when they're in school, why not wait till they're hungry, give them food that they will eat when they're hungry?
Yeah. You know what's interesting, too, is the older we get and we get in these habits of eating poorly, but we go out and we buy expensive vitamins to supplement. And it's okay, I think, to do the supplement, but we're going, well, I don't want to spend the money on the good, healthy nutrition foods, but I'm going to spend a whole bunch of money on vitamins to help me feel better. It's almost crazy to me, because spend that money on the proper diet, the foods, and you may not have to spend hundreds of dollars a week on these vitamins.
Yes, that's a really good point. And online, there's so many advertisements for premium vitamins or concoctions. Put a couple of vitamins together with herbs, and this is going to solve this problem, and this one's going to solve this problem. And they get more and more and more expensive. And I do believe in supplementing with things that are depleted in our organic, even our organic fields. But you don't need to have the super expensive premium supplements if you're eating real food. And it the backstory on that is that your body is designed to process food, not to process capsules or individualized vitamins and things. And so why not give your body the chance to do what it's supposed to do? And then if you need a supplement, okay. But you can't supplement your way into health without having a good diet. You can't make up for the refined foods and the additives and the missing nutrients.
Yeah, that is. And I was one of those guilty of, you know, trying to do that. But I've changed my ways, and I'm working at it still. But before we really get into the single ingredient diet, can you tell us what those five lifestyle habits might be that will help you, you know, live a longer chronic free or chronic disease free lifestyle, or add years to your lifestyle, or add years to your life? I don't know how to say that.
Sure. Yes. It was a great study. They looked at in the cohort that they were looking at, it was hundreds of thousands of people. And what they found was that if people, they used, I think they were watching people from age 50 on. And if they did four out of these five lifestyle habits, they added 10 to 12 years on the end of their life of chronic disease-free years. So say the average person would start getting cardiovascular stresses in their at 65. Now they would get it at 75. And it also implied longevity too. If they tended to die at 80, they would instead die closer to 90. And the best was 14 that I think it was white women, unfortunately, who could actually save 14 healthy years if they did all five of these habits. So the first one's not smoking, never having smoked. That was the first one. Second one was not being overweight. But people get crazy about what is overweight. The what they said, as long as a woman, say 5'4" like me, is 140 or less pounds, that's okay. And for men, a man who is 5'10" it was, could go up to 175 and still be fine. So it's not like you have to run around skinny and not eat. These are healthy sizes. The smoking and the weight or BMI actually were the most determining of the length of chronic spree disease. The third was nutrition. And again, it was not a hard level to beat. You only had to be in the top 40% of the assessment of the quality of your diet. So again, you didn't have to be, you know, vegan or keto or paleo or anything specific. It just had to get away from the really nasty ultra processed foods. And then the other two were drinking moderately, no more than one drink, whether beer, whiskey or beer or wine in a night, one serving per average night. And of course, not binging on weekends. You can't make up like that. And then the fifth was a moderate exercise. Again, not a high standard. It was half an hour. A brisk walk was enough. Half an hour of brisk activity, a brisk walk or moderate activity. So those are not high standards to meet. And I think that's a really important study because people who are busy and are kind of putting off paying attention to their health, they think that to avoid these chronic diseases, they need to buy a membership at the fitness club and go over there an hour every day. And they think that they have to have a perfect diet and that they have to be skinny. And, you know, it's not true. The body's designed to, for moderation, really.
Yeah.
So that's why I think that study is so important.
This is just a comment, and you don't have to answer on this because I think it's pretty controversial and very, very touchy. And it's, you know, we talk about weight. We talk about BMI, body mass, what is it, body mass index?
I don't know.
So basically your height, your weight, your bone density, all that kind of stuff, I think. But we have gotten into that society or that point in time where we'll say no body shaming. I can be obese. I'm just going to say that word obese, and I'm proud and happy, and I'm going to keep myself that way, which I personally think is dangerous. But it's, we shouldn't body shame people, but I think that we have to be realistic about this and really understand, no, I am overweight. I need to do something about it if I want to live a healthy life. I just want to throw that out there because I've heard and I've seen so many people now say, you're body shaming me and I love myself and I'm going to keep it. Basically, they're saying, I'm going to keep this weight on, and which, again, I don't think is a healthy idea, but somehow we got to change that narrative.
Yeah, I definitely agree with you, Chuck. It's controversial. And I address it in my book in a couple of different ways because it is so important and it is a topic of popular conversation. And of course, you don't shame anybody for anything. You know, if somebody breaks their leg because they do a stupid thing, you don't tell them what a stupid thing you did. You say, oh, wow, I'm sorry you're in pain. I hope it gets better. And you don't bring it up. You know, if they're limping a little, unless you know them well, you're not going to say, hey, why are you limping? You must have done something stupid. You know, that kind of shaming we don't do in any other situation. So we shouldn't do it with anybody, you know, maybe their hair is strange or the way they smile is off. We don't say anything. But we do recognize that that it's a choice that they're making. And they should be assertive about who they are this moment. And we can say to ourselves, well, I hope they are doing something about this because it's a health risk. It's like being with a smoker. You don't immediately say, boy, what a stupid thing you're doing. You know, you're killing your lungs. We hopefully don't shame about smoking or even drinking. And so I personally believe that our obesity epidemic is due to manipulation through the really poor food that's being foisted on us. And so I don't even blame people for making that error of consuming too many calories because their brain is being manipulated by the ultra-processed foods, and some of the additives even cause addiction. So, and we know from studies that sugar acts like an addict in an addictive substance in the brain. And so there's real work being done on the metabolic syndrome where the whole metabolism is changed by these really poor diets. And it's very easy to get into that you're always hungry because your body's not producing the energy it needs to produce because it's not getting fed properly. So certainly they don't deserve any shame and they should love themselves today. But we're all trying to improve all the time, I hope.
Yeah.
So you can assume that too. And whatever they're working on is their business. But we can just in our heart hope that they are trying to be a healthier weight. And throughout my book, I talk about healthy weight. We're not talking about Looking a certain way or meeting a certain ideal. We're talking about a healthy weight for you. And,
Right.
that's for you to figure out with your, if you have health advisors, with them, with their help, but not your friends or somebody on TV, you know.
You know, that's a couple of the other things. So we used to, back in the day, say that they look like Ken and Barbie type of thing. Hopefully I don't get in trouble for using that analogy, but that's not who we are. That's not who we should aspire to be. Like you said, we are looking at doing things in moderation. We're not looking at guys building these bulky muscles and six-pack abs and females that, you know, stand on their tippy toes all the time straight and look like Barbie. That's not what we're talking about. We're talking about being healthy. Like you said, a woman at 5'4" could be 140 pounds, healthy. We're not saying 5'4" and 98 pounds because you're skinny.
Right.
That may not be healthy, but maybe for some people close to that weight who's an athlete runner, maybe, I don't know. But
yeah,
still,
they're a marathoner or they're on the catwalk in Milan, maybe they have to do that for their particular choice of career, but it's not healthy and they know it.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
They pay for it later.
And that's the thing about later, you're talking about whether it be, you know, these empty calories that we take in and these sugars that change our brain into thinking that we want more food and crave, and we know better. But we need to do what we can today to have that chronic free end of lifetime. We don't want to say we're going to live to be 85 years old, but the last 10 years we could barely get around. What fun and what use is that, you know?
Yes, exactly. And that's another concern, and why I wanted to write my book and inform people about this, is that I do hear young people saying it's not worth living to the 60s, 80s, because they think, well, I'm going to be demented or I'm going to be dependent on my children. So it's almost an excuse not to try to prevent these problems, because they say, oh, well, I don't even want to live that long. And I'm 75 now, and I try to tell them, it's worth it. I mean, it's worth being healthy and waking up feeling great and knowing you can go do what you want to do. Your body is at your service because you've been good to it. And I had an uncle who was chopping wood for the following winter when he was 99 and clear as a button. He was still lecturing and writing. And I had a couple of aunts that were in their 90s, and one used a cane, but I had wonderful conversations with all of them about what happened yesterday as well as what happened 70 years before. So there's no reason to believe that your life has to have a very sad last 10 years, or you have to, you know, be dependent on caretakers in your last, in your older years.
There was a time we called this the golden years. You know, you retire, you're getting older, you go out and you're able to do things, you enjoy the fruits of your labor, and you do everything that you want. It's so, taking care of yourself, the preventative medicine now, is the best thing for today, tomorrow, and your future. I want to really dive into your book, The Single Ingredient Diet. So what is that all about?
Okay, well, yeah, it's I chose the title to make people curious, because it's, I remember when I was growing up, my mother tried the grapefruit diet for a while. So it's not about one ingredient. It's about starting with single ingredients, real foods that your great-grandmother, I used to say grandmother, but now I say great-grandmother, would have recognized as an edible food coming from nature, as comes from a real farm, not a processing plant. And I just did a video this morning on the Wall Street Journal and the Food Institute, which is an industry publication, said that big food is fighting back because the government is actually starting to consider telling people to avoid processed, ultra-processed foods. In the past, they've said, you know, be sure you lower your sugar, lower your salt, lower your red meat that's been nitrated and processed. But they've never said, this is a category that's just not feeding you. And all the additives, every one of them is a stress on the body. Even if it's not going to kill you this week or this year, it's an added stress on everything in your bodies, particularly your liver and your kidneys and your skin. So we keep using all these lotions to try to clear our skin, but our skin acts as an eliminating organ, and so does our breath. So we're more vulnerable to respiratory problems if we're constantly trying to get rid of toxins through our breath. So it's really important for people to realize that it's not that hard to avoid. And using single ingredients, taking only real foods home, and you can do whatever you want with them at home, but they're real foods. You're not gonna add all kinds of things to change the color and change the flavor and change the texture. You're not gonna extrude your rice and extrude your wheat. You're going to allow your body to process it. And your body has a wonderfully sophisticated order in which to pick things apart and hand them to the blood at the proper rate. And if we ignore that, it's really, even that's just a burden on the body.
Yeah, like you said, at a proper rate, that means eating the right portions and things like that. One thing, I might be wrong on this, but, you know, my thinking is, maybe in the past, I don't know about now, a lot of times a lot of families will go, oh, okay, I need to serve more meat or whatever, can't get that ribeye over there. We're going to get hot dogs, that's meat, right? So high in nitrates.
Yeah,
so
exactly.
Not good. Don't go and go, hey, I'm gonna eat 6 hot dogs because, you know, that's meat. It's going to be good for me. That's taxing your body. A lot of sodium, nitrates, all that stuff, so it's bad. Maybe moderation might be okay. I like my corn dogs, you know, now and then.
Well, it's a frequency, you know. If you're out on a Saturday mm-hmm. night, okay, you know, have some hot dogs at the barbecue. But you don't do it every day, and you don't snack on them. And, you know, it's a choice that you need. We make eating choices, you know, dozens of times a day, and you just have to keep in mind what you're really trying to do.
Yeah, I don't look at hot dogs as a meat replacement for, you know, good meat. it's a fun thing, like I said. That's why I like my corn dogs every now and then. It's like, oh, quick grab, I love it with the mustard. But yeah, it's not a meat replacement. The other thing too, as far as, and I say more so with our North American culture, is salt. Oh, that's flavor. Everybody puts salt, 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 salt. You go to a restaurant, salt, salt, salt. It's not good for you. And the one thing that just dumbfounds me is people who order foods or whatever it might be. They've got the plate in front of them before they even take a bite. It's salt, and pass the salt, please. And they're dumping salt on it. Oh, this tastes so good.
Yes, you have to taste your food first. And that's a really important point, because people are now having problems because they're not eating enough salt. They've gone to the other extreme, and this is a minority. I mean, what you're saying is absolutely true. What people don't realize is that the processed foods have a whole lot of extra salt. So if you're eating processed foods, the chances are you're probably getting 2 to 3 times what you're supposed to have in a day, but you don't taste it. That's why they add it so much, because when it's in a can or it's frozen, your body doesn't detect the salt as much. Plus, a lot of the additives are sodium-based, but we don't taste them because they aren't sodium chloride. So you're getting all this extra sodium with the additives, but you don't know it because you can't taste it. So you're adding it at the table when it's already in there, the sodium, which is what throws you off. It's moderation, but real food, if you're bringing home real food that doesn't have any salt added to it, then you can just salt to taste. Taste it first, and if, okay, you'd like a little salt, you can put a touch of salt on it. And your body will tell you how much salt you need if you're giving it real food. But if you put in the processed foods that hide the salt, then you've got a real problem. You're not going to know how much you're getting. And then you're like, no, I'm not going to put any salt on because it's already in there. And they doctor it up with all kinds of things to make it taste good. So, but in a restaurant, it depends on the restaurant. If they're if it's McDonald's, yeah, there's going to be a lot of hiding sodium. But if it's a, you know, farm to table kind of local restaurant, then you know they're using real food, or you can tell by looking at it whether it's plain single ingredient foods. So the basic idea is just bring real food into your house and try to go to places, if you're eating out, where they're going to give you real food instead of something that they bought to throw in a microwave.
And taste it first, like we were saying. I am one of those guys, one of the people that you're kind of alluding to, where I had taken out salt out of my diet completely, which was not good. I noticed it actually like 5 or 7 years later is when I was kind of wondering, what is going on? Low in salt. But now I'm to the point, I don't add any salt because, like I said, I'm trying to eat more of the proper foods, and it has the sodium, the salts in there. But I do notice that if I go to a restaurant, even if there's just a little tiny bit of extra, it's like, to me, it's over the top, and I get so parched. I don't know if that's due to because my body had gotten so used to being depleted of the salt.
I'm sorry. Some salt is essential to digestion, and that's why apparently Solomon's mines in the Bible were salt mines. They weren't silver mines. They were salt mines. So when you're feeding a whole lot of people cheap grains, they need some salt to build their acid, to develop the digestion. So a lot of I've seen GI gastrointestinal problems where the person just has completely left salt out. They're not eating any processed foods and they're not taking it, and they end up having digestive issues because they're just not digesting properly. They're not producing the stomach acid they need.
I'll say this: if you don't want to have salt, if you don't want to have that sodium, but you love cheese, get some good cheese. It'll have your sodium in there.
There you go. That's perfect. Yes, because certainly the fermenting bacteria that make cheese, they bring out the salty taste. Yeah, that's good. Yeah. Good suggestion.
I want to add one more time about your book again. It's The Single Ingredient Diet, and when we say that, Randy's not saying, well, it's only one ingredient that you're going to eat. It's single ingredients to make your healthy foods, your healthy lifestyle of eating. So,
And the industry has picked up on that. They argue about what's wrong with 52 ingredients, as long as we have the right things in the nutrition label. So I tell people, you know, nutrition labels are almost gaslighting us that it's all right to have all these long ingredient lists, because the industry is getting sensitive, the food processing industry, that there are some, you'll see them, and I know in Whole Foods and some natural food stores that say only 5 ingredients or only 3 ingredients. And the industry is really upset about that because it implies that maybe that's better. And of course it is, but they don't want us to know that. So so that's the other reason I used single ingredient diet, because people are aware that it's better not to have 20 ingredients, half of which your great-grandmother wouldn't be able to process and would have never heard of and haven't even been tested in by the government.
Like I said, never even heard of, let alone trying to pronounce some of those things, you know? It's just like, what right. the heck? So, and it's good that we're trying to make this move to remove some of the dyes and stuff like that, that we've, you know, come to find out that they're not good for us. All right, so we kind of touched on this a little bit about making excuses and being weak-minded and saying, well, you know, my willpower is not very good, so that's why I always give in to eating bad stuff. How can we fix and change that? We do have the power if we want to, right?
Yes, I that's a really important point that I like to make. The popular thinking is that, and at the end of every article even, they will say, oh, but we love this stuff. So they're still kind of teaching us that we are weak-willed. But it is the food that's making us that way. Like I said before, it makes compulsive eating. And there's actually corporate records in the some of the companies where they say, oh, somebody might actually start suing us because we happen to know that this makes for compulsive eating. So that's a term they use. They don't actually say addiction usually, but compulsive eating is what's going on. And it's so even doctors will tell patients that, oh, well, you know, you need more willpower. Well, it's not that we don't have willpower. I mean, if you look at a four-year-old, they have willpower. We are born with willpower. We're being gaslighted and misled on a really poor diet so that our brain isn't getting the food it needs. And so every 2 hours, it's like, okay, I need some more glucose. And then you reach for the stuff. But it's not because your will is bad. It's because you're not even feeding the organ that creates the will, really. And the other part is thinking, well, we're all sedentary. Well, again, a four-year-old, they hate sitting for 3 hours in school. They want to get up and do stuff. And we are the same. We want to move. We love dancing. I mean, you see everybody dancing in the ads and stuff. We do want to move. But if you're carrying an extra 100 pounds, going up and down stairs isn't fun anymore, you know? So it's not that we are weak-willed or sedentary by nature. It is our poor diet that's making us that way. So I try to inform people that you're being manipulated by this diet. And you can get back to the real you, that's strong-willed, and say, I had a good breakfast, so I don't need this snack. And I'm going to go take a walk instead. That's where we want to get.
Well, you know, you're talking about that. And the first thing that popped into my mind is, if a place of employment says, we're going to have a meeting, come on in, we've got coffee and donuts. Great. If you say we have water and carrots, you're going to go, what? So yes. I mean, we've gotten in that habit. Everybody does it. Everybody pushes it on you. And what would you, most people, if you had that coffee and donuts here or carrots and water, we're going to run to the coffee and donuts because we want that sugar and it looks pretty and it tastes great, but it's not that healthy for you.
Yeah, that's a really good point. And it's a habit that we get into. And the simplest answer is eat well enough that you don't need to snack and just say, oh, no, thanks. And I talked to a New York model one time, and she came to dinner and she tried everything and she said, oh, that is so good. And then I said, oh, there's plenty there. And she said, oh, no, that's enough. I mean, she knew how to handle it. So if you're like, oh, who brought the donuts? They look so good. I had a big breakfast. I'm sorry. You know, you can have those scripts ready to protect your health. It was my first job when I was working for a TV station that I realized something was really going on, because everybody got up every 2 hours and got either a cup of coffee or a candy bar or both. And I had never been a snacker. I was raised to eat three meals a day. And I was like, what is this? So I thought it was strange. And then when I started studying nutrition, I'm like, oh, they want that energy boost because they didn't have a good breakfast and they skipped lunch. And they're looking forward to a quick McDonald's dinner on their way home when they're going to the soccer game. So you need to rethink some of those choices during your day and learn some scripts for work when they try to entice you in with donuts.
Yeah, it's, you know, we said habit. Make it a habit to say no on some of those occasions when that donut is there. No, thank you, I'm good.
Oh. And don't do it judgmentally. Oh, right. I don't eat those. Don't go there, because then people are like, oh, I don't want to eat with her. Just say, no, not today. Or, you know, yeah. I had a big breakfast. I'm going for a big dinner. Yeah.
Yeah. So, there are so many things that we can do. There are these choices, and those choices we have to make, and these habits that we either have that are bad, we have to learn to break those habits and start new, better habits if we want to have a healthier life. Now, before we close out, I want to know, and I'm sure everybody out there wants to know, is there someplace that we can go to learn more about you and your book, books plural, and about nutrition and everything?
Sure. Well, if you don't mind, I'll just show you my new book. I love the cover. It's got the kind of salad that you can do, but everything in there was originally a single ingredient that I brought into my house and mixed up. And it's available on Amazon, and it's a fun read. It's completely up to date. I spent an extra 2 years really bringing it completely up to date, and I learned a lot about how much manipulation is going on, both in the popular impressions that the industry and the government are giving us, and in the mythology that goes around that we've talked about, the excuses and the, oh, I don't want to grow old, and it's too hard to avoid these chronic problems. They just happen. You know, we just don't have to think that way. But to find out more about me, is my website is randyrolf.com, and all my books are there. I've written parenting books and nutrition books and personality types and things like that. So there's 9 books there, and I'm happy to speak to any group. I love educating people to live happier, healthier lives, particularly families, because parents affect their children, the next generation.
Yeah. I have really enjoyed this. It's really, you know, again, it's one of those things, I think, where most people know what they're supposed to do, but we just don't do it. But when you hear it from an expert, and when you hear it over and over, it's like, okay.
Well, so that was one of my questions. Effort. Why don't we do it if we know that we should eat less and exercise more? But it's because of what we're doing to our brains with poor food. And can I offer one more thing? If you go to website Single Ingredient Diet, there's a free training on there all about it. And forget the, it's just singleingredientdiet.com.
Okay, singleingredientdiet.com. Got it. We'll make sure that we've got everything in the show notes so everybody knows where to go, so we can all start a healthier and better lifestyle, so we can all live a healthy life throughout. Hey, thanks for watching and thanks for listening. Hey, now I know what a dietitian is and a nutritionist is, and they're not the same thing. But other than that, you know, once again, So what are these things that I know we all know what we're supposed to do, but we just have the hardest time doing it. But remember, it is for the benefit of you and your health and a long, healthy life. So do it. Eat healthy, exercise, get some good sleep. Remember, go to randyrolfe.com. That's RandyRolfe.com. And also singleingredientdiet.com. That's it, folks. Remember, if you're a pet owner, please be responsible and have your pets spayed or neutered. Till next time, eat healthy, have a good day. Bye-bye.